can't teach us to take a few days off. This is a special episode of House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. Hello, Emma Bunnell.
Hello, Charlotte Henry. Flipping it.
Right. About, I don't know, 7, 8 o'clock Thursday evening, Emma and I were like, we're completely worn down, do personal, professional things. It's been a bit of a quiet week in politics. We'll take a week off and resume all fired up in a few days' time. That went well.
Yeah, whenever we go on holiday, we're going to have to make sure, you know, the way that you have to leave a desert or travel in different planes or something.
Yeah, desert. Oh, dear. Right, let's start at the very beginning. Well, technically, the very beginning was a bit of a, I don't want to call it a U-turn, but a bit of a shift in policy from Labour, which was about to cause a little bit of a problem, I think, on that. It was kind of green spending, but we don't have time to get into that because...
And that is where Labour is doing the biggest happy dance.
Yep, exactly. Because a few hours later, Nadine Dorris resigned, stood down as MP for Mid Bedfordshire. An hour later, we got the Boris Johnson resignations honours list, which did not have Nadine Dorris on it, because we've only been saying for what, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks that she was going to be on it and that was going to provoke a by-election. But we're having that by-election anyway because Nadine Dorris has quit the Commons earlier than she said she would. And then, just as I was having dinner on Friday night, Boris Johnson, the former MP, he's a former MP, he's a former Prime Minister and was, technically still is, we'll come on to that, the MP for Uxbridge and South Ruislip. He quit. And then on Saturday, another ally, Nigel Adams, quit the Commons. So that's... Trying to avoid by-elections, they've got three of them. Let's deal with that first.
He's so good at politics, isn't he?
Well, we'll come on to that. Let's start with the by-elections. We did unpack these slightly, didn't we? Because we said mid-beds looked okay. Tories can probably hold on onto that. I know both the Lib Dems and Labour have gone ploughing in there just out of principle, but I don't think they're going to be able to turn. When we looked, it was over about 24,000, wasn't it, Nadine Dorris' majority. So that's, I think, unlikely. I think Boris Johnson's seat is going to flip. I think it might well have flipped at a general election anyway, which is why he was probably never going to fight that general election. Nigel Adams, I have to confess, I don't know that much about, but the two big names.
Look, Selby's got around a 20,000 majority.
So that probably within saving distance.
It's within safe reason. If, for example, the Lib Dems go hard in mid-beds and Labour goes hard in Selby, it might be that they can get the anti-Tory vote at this point.
Yeah, because Labour are going to have to plough into two seats.
Yeah.
Probably at the same time.
If Boris Johnson, as is not yet been denied, but I think it would be very, very tough, if he tries to become the candidate for mid-beds and Rishi Sunak doesn't stop him becoming the candidate for mid-beds, which I think Boris Johnson will find out whether he'll be stopped first.
Of course,
before
he
decides to go for it. But that doesn't mean that he wouldn't go for it because he wants to be thrown out of the Tory party in a blaze of glory in order to go on to other things, which I wrote about at the weekend.
You did. Let's unpack the psychodrama, actually, because that's really what it's all about. We've had Boris Johnson, the shenanigans that we've covered on this show with the Privileges Committee. And in his statement, he directly had a swing at the Privileges Committee. And I've hated having to compare Boris Johnson to Trump. I think it has for a lot of years been quite naff and lazy. But as time has gone on, it's been harder and harder. It's been harder and harder to avoid it. And this statement for me, when he quit, has become the most Trumpian act yet. He says that the Privileges Committee has still not produced a shred of evidence that I knowingly or recklessly misled MPs, Parliament. He said they know perfectly.
Well, that's theoretically true in that they haven't published the report yet, Boris.
Yeah, we were expecting that actually today, Monday, when we're recording. I don't think we've seen it yet at the time of recording. So that
No, I think it's coming out. It's being signed off today, I believe.
Okay, so we'll see you for another emergency podcast, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday. So elsewhere in his statement, he said, they know perfectly well that when I spoke in the Commons, I was saying what I believe sincerely to be true, what I had been briefed to say, like any other minister. They know that I corrected the record as soon as possible, and they know that I and every other senior official and minister, including the current Prime Minister and then occupant of the same building, Rishi Sunak, believed we were working lawfully together. I have been an MP since 2001. I take my responsibility seriously. I did not lie, and I believe that in their hearts the committee know it, but they have willfully chosen to ignore the truth because from their outset, their purpose has not been to discover the truth or genuinely to understand what was in my mind when I spoke in the Commons. Their purpose from the beginning has been to find me guilty, regardless of the facts. This is the very definition of a kangaroo court. Now, this makes me want to repeat a conversation we had when this all kicked off, which is about the membership of this committee. This is not a bunch of it's chaired by Harriet Harman, but has a Conservative majority. This is a very serious collection of people who take their responsibilities to Parliament very seriously. Harriet Harman is the chair. The most senior Conservative on it is Sir Bernard Jenkin. These are not, we said it months ago, these are not people to mess around with.
No, and they're not people who are going to, more importantly, far more importantly, they're not people who are going to mess around. They're not playing politics with this. They are there to uphold the dignity of Parliament, such as it's able to be upheld in a time when Boris Johnson got to be Prime Minister.
Let's think of this. Most senior Conservatives on this is Sir Charles Walker and Sir Bernard Jenkin. It's chaired, as we said, by Harriet Harman. This is a serious group of people who, even with their more junior colleagues, this is not how you mess around. They are there to uphold the standards of Parliament. So the idea you could play around with and sending your WhatsApps and not sending your WhatsApps, the idea that they're coming up, I mean, I think lots of things about Harriet Harman. The idea that she would lead a kangaroo court, to use Boris Johnson's phrase, is just nonsense.
Complete nonsense. It's complete, and it's obfuscating.
And more, sorry to interrupt.
The gallery, it's playing to the crowd.
Quite right, and sorry to interrupt, but the idea that Sir Charles Walker and Sir Bernard Jenkin would let her get away with that, if that were in any way true, is also nonsense.
Yeah. No, it's alternative facts.
Yes.
Bullshit.
It is a nonsense, and it is, as you playing to the gallery is exactly the right phrase, because the idea that he's like so hard done by, he's jumping before he was pushed. He did not want to be suspended for length of time that would trigger a by-election. He did not want to lose in a general election. This is his best exit strategy, and he doesn't care what he brings down, if he brings down the dignity of Parliament with it.
Oh, I think he cares a great deal who he brings down with him.
Oh, well, maybe.
I think that's a large part of the motivation, is the fact that he's a nasty piece of work who thrives on ego and vengeance.
I mean, there's certainly a lot of ego here, and there's certainly a lot of anger against the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, here. It's worth picking up on comments that Rishi Sunak has made before we recorded this. He's speaking at London Tech Week, but was obviously asked about it. He said that Boris Johnson asked him to do something I wasn't prepared to do. That's the quote. I wasn't prepared to do that. I didn't think that was right. And if people don't like that, then tough. That's, he was referring to approving the appointment.
Talk about being a tough guy after the fact. Come off.
No, Dean Doris and some of the other names that have been floating around are not on that list.
No, yeah, but I mean, he was the briefing 4 days ago was, we have made an ameliorative deal with Boris. We're trying to make this as comfortable as possible so that he doesn't kick us in the teeth.
Yeah, there was a bit of that.
Anyway, because Boris is a scorpion and we all know the story of the scorpion and the frog. Why did you sting me? We're both going to drown. It's my nature. And the fact that Rishi Sunak has messed up the politics of this and is trying desperately to scrabble something back is not impressing me much. Shania. Well,
I mean, I didn't expect it to, but what would have been the way to hand it then?
I mean, can't ask him anything else. Look at who he did put through.
Sure. Yes, there's a lot of
people who were a major part of the Partygate scandal.
Yeah, or lots of advisors. I have to say, there's some people who are not particularly experienced to sit in the upper chamber
No. It's a bunch of cronies. And these lists always are,
sure,
to a greater or lesser extent, but talk about to a greater extent.
Yeah.
This is an appalling list and probably will be the end of this practice, because how can it not be?
Yeah,
and
well...
And it absolutely should be.
Yeah, so they're on there, if you... I'm not going to spend time reading through it, but if you look through, there are all sorts of, as you say, people that worked for Boris Johnson in Downing Street were there at the time the Partygate stuff unfolded, and so on and so forth. So that, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with much what you say, but how, so you think he should have disapproved the whole list and said, go back, go away?
Yeah, ultimately.
And how?
You are a disgraced prime minister. And certainly, I don't think he should have waved it through a couple of days before the privilege, or at any point before the Privileges Committee came up with their report.
Yeah, that could have been delayed for that. Either way, this was going to be a massive fight and a problem.
Yeah, it was, but there are ways and ways. And frankly, he should have said, not that list, not this time.
But then we'd have still been, would have been in the same situation where Boris Johnson blows everything up.
But he has done anyway. So what?
Yeah, exactly.
By being crap.
Yeah, he could at least, yeah, maybe he could have done it so that Sunak at least got some credit for sticking up for some kind of honour. Yeah, that might well have worked. Would have been in this situation
anyway.
It's an
overused attack on Sunak, but he just looks weak again.
This whole thing is just a total mess. So where do we go from here? We're going to, technically this morning, as I understand it, the three MPs, Doris, Johnson and Adams, had not formally resigned yet.
I think they may have put in that they need to get given the...
Yeah, it's a whole...
And the Chiltern thing.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. It's a whole bizarre thing. The process is playing out.
The process hasn't happened, but it's in train. They're not going to go back to it now.
Correct. It's just, we don't quite know how it plays out yet with the... by-elections, because the writs for those have not been served yet. So that's what's going to be interesting. Do you think...
Yeah, and someone was asking me the other day when I thought the by-elections would be, and there is time to have them before summer recess, which is what I suspect will happen, because they won't want to have them just in the middle of party conference season.
No. You want to have... Assuming that the Conservatives probably lose... They might lose... We think they'll lose at least one, could lose two. I doubt that. I don't think they'll lose all three. That would be pretty shocking.
I mean, we are in a turbulent anti-Tory moment. We saw how badly they did at the locals.
Yep.
It may be that fortune, and we've seen how badly they've done in by-elections recently.
Yep.
So it may be that they do manage to cling on in some. It may be that they lose all three. Either way, I think... Unless something extraordinary happens and they hold on to Uxbridge, I think the narrative is set.
Yeah, and you're quite right that you want to get that done. You don't want that happening during party conference season. I mean, it's not great going into party conference season, but at least you can maybe get
it all
done.
Well, if you've got the summer in between where everyone's gone on holiday and had a bit of a chill.
Calm down a bit. Yeah, that might just about settle things. Now, the question is, do you do them all on the same day? And I guess the answer is yes, to get the pain done in one go.
Get the pain out. Yeah, absolutely.
Makes campaign...
You don't want to drip feed that pain.
I think that's right, though it does slightly make organising the campaign...
Because even if they hold on, they're going to hold on with reduced majorities.
Sure.
So, it won't be the Tories are okay story.
No, I think holding on to Uxbridge might swing it that way.
Yes, that would definitely swing it that way.
But I think you're right. You've got to get the pain in one go. It makes campaign coordination and organisation slightly harder, but because you've got to spread your resources a bit more. But that's what is hard anyway when you've got multiple by-elections basically at the same time. They're never going to be able to be spread out so much that you don't have that issue. The thing we've seen is, you're right to point out the local elections and recent by-elections, because the Conservative Party, and we saw this as recently as the 2019 general election, used to be an absolute election-winning machine. That is what they did. They won elections one way or the other. And you just cannot see how that can happen in three by-elections on the same day. I don't see how activists sniping each other are going to be motivated to go to these seats and try and fight for them. Whereas obviously the opposition parties activists are going to be super, you're already seeing stuff coming out from Labour and the Lib Dems. They are super, super motivated. I just don't see how they can get the ground campaigns going.
No, and the Tories win general elections through their massive support in the media. You know, they are, I think it's Stephen Bush's phrase, they get to play politics on the easy setting. And it's much, much harder when you don't have most of the major British newspapers pulling in your direction. Because even with the broadcasters, you know, all of them do a newspaper review. All of them get their editorial meetings set by the Daily Mail, the Times. You know, these are, so it is much, so by-elections are always harder for Conservatives because they don't have quite that same sort of national impact.
And the ground infrastructure.
And they don't have the ground troops. They never have had. They're older. Mm. So, and they're a party tearing themselves to pieces. If you look at one of the differences between the 2017 Labour campaign and the 2019 Labour campaign, is that in 2017, everyone in Labour put aside their differences and just did well their best. And by 2019, that just wasn't happening.
I think the next thing we have to discuss is what's next for Boris Johnson. So here's a theory I saw floating around Twitter on Friday night, and I rather like. The Telegraph might be looking for a new editor soon.
Oh, interesting. That's one way to go. I floated the idea that he could take over Reform UK. That's in my piece on it. You know, Richard Tice is not exactly knocking them dead. There is a Nigel Farage has been floating a Johnson Farage party.
Sorry, again, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can we just take a minute on this? I don't normally like to criticise bookers and political TV shows because they have to have all sorts of people all the time. Did we need Boris Johnson on Laura Koonsberg? Sorry, Nigel Farage on Laura Koonsberg's show on Sunday morning? What relevance does he have now?
Well, if he's going to start a new political party with Johnson, quite a lot of relevance. If he's not, then none.
That hasn't happened yet. Anyway,
it hasn't happened yet, but he's teasing it.
I just don't. I mean, it's not about.
I mean, I don't see that lasting because those two egos trying to charge the same thing would just be insane.
I mean, disaster. Anyway, sorry to divert you. It just struck me as this was not a week.
Basically, I don't see the Tories letting him run in mid-beds. I don't see the Tories run in any seat in this side of the next general election. So I don't think he'll run in the next general election, by which point it's a bit late for him.
And also, let's be honest, Boris Johnson does not want to be a leader of the opposition.
No, but he might want to be the leader of an insurgent party that kills Rishi Sunak's Tories even more at the next general election.
Yes, and he might want to be the leader that brings the Conservatives back to power in 2028 or something. No, it'd be a bit later than that, wouldn't it? No, 2028.
He wouldn't be allowed to do that if he does start a new party or joins Reform.
Correct. So he might want to sit it out and do something else for a bit. And that's my point. He might not do politics for a few years.
Yeah, but those are the basic options.
Yeah. My bet is he earns a lot of money either writing a column or editing a publication. And maybe returns in 4 years' time. If he can. But this is not someone that cares about politics for the sake of politics.
No, he has no political ideology at all. His only care is that Boris Johnson be in charge of things. He doesn't want to be in charge of things for a purpose.
No. And I think we saw that when he was the prime minister. It's about being, I mean, it's about being the head boy, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Any else on Boris Johnson you want to get off your chest before we delve into a more tricky subject north of the border?
No. Do read my piece, which was on my Substack. It's one of my free pieces about what I think Boris Johnson's political options are, although I hadn't heard the rumour about the Telegraph, so that's not in there.
Yeah, it's all because there's some financial issues going on with the people that own Telegraph.
Well, I know the Telegraph is getting bought out as well as the Spectator.
Exactly. So there could be all sorts of shake-ups. And one of them might involve, you know, it wouldn't be the weirdest thing, would it, Boris Johnson returning?
No, I mean, it's his natural home.
I think so. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on it. Right. Because things weren't dramatic enough in England, north of the border.
Boris Johnson is technically the Prime Minister of north of the border too, by the way.
Or he was.
Well, yes, sorry.
Yes, but the seats that have all gone up are in England.
Indeed, yeah.
So, north of the border, Nicola Sturgeon was arrested and interviewed by Police Scotland over the issues that have been rumbling on for a long time relating to SNP finances. We should say she was there for a few hours and left without...
7 hours and 15 minutes.
Left without charge. But let's make that very clear. We also, and I'm going to read her full statement because Emma and I don't have the money to deal with a lawyer. Nope. she, as has been the case with her husband and the party treasurer of the time, have all denied any wrongdoing throughout this process. So Nicola Sturgeon said, to find myself in the situation I did today, i.e. Sunday, when I am certain I have committed no offence, is both a shock and deeply distressing. I know that this ongoing investigation is difficult for people, and I am grateful that so many continue to show faith in me and appreciate that I would never do anything to harm either the SNP or the country. Obviously, given the nature of this process, I cannot go into detail. However, I do wish to say this and to do so in the strongest possible terms. Innocence is not just a presumption I am entitled to in law. I know beyond doubt that I am in fact innocent of any wrongdoing. So that's Nicola Sturgeon's statement after she was interviewed by arrangement. Apparently she'd been doing her driving theory test the day before, I think I read. She was interviewed by arrangement, but she was arrested during that process. It's a huge, huge turn. And I joked at the top of the show about everyone forgetting about Labour's policy wobble. Goodness me, Keir Starmer has been a lucky general, because this puts a huge amount of pressure on Nicola Sturgeon's successor, Humza Yousaf, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, Labour were already hoping to win clawback about 10 seats in Scotland at least. And it's just more, the more this story rumbles on, whatever its outcome, the better that is for the Labour Party. But if it has one of the potential outcomes of there being a trial, that's just going to be disastrous for the SNP.
It's a real kind of... Whatever happens, again, Nicola Sturgeon absolutely, and all those involved absolutely insist on their innocence. But this is a total mess.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what, as I understand it, the question is whether money that was donated specifically towards a campaign for a second referendum was instead funneled to run the SNP itself. And I think part of the problem, and one of the ways that you can absolutely convince yourself of your innocence, is if you genuinely believe that the cause of the SNP is the same as the cause of a referendum, and therefore the two are contiguous and have no separation. But that's not the same as true in financial law.
Yeah, although, again, they all...
And I don't know, I'm speculating on... how it's perfectly possible for these people to fundamentally believe in their innocence, whilst also maybe have fundamentally have challenged the law.
Yeah, or and equally, it's possible that that argument stands up in law.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, we shouldn't speculate too much. It's an ongoing court case. It's not, you know, we don't want
ongoing investigations.
Ongoing investigation that's not yet gone to court. And no. There have been no charges, as I understand it, certainly for the key players. Yeah.
No, those three people that I mentioned have all left after their interviews without charge.
I mean, in terms of the process, my guess is that we are probably going to get to a point of charging or not very soon, because I can't imagine that Sturgeon wasn't at the very end of that list. That they wouldn't have made this arrest pretty close to the end of whatever their process is.
Yeah, we don't know how Police Scotland are operating, but that may well be right. And let's just swing back to the politics of it, because the legals of it are tricky and we can't actually say all that much. But the politics of it, however, they could all end up being completely exonerated.
They could all end up being completely exonerated.
The imagery of, you know, a tarpaulin over Sturgeon husband's garden.
The random RV.
Not, you know, the fact, you know, going through this process, it is in no way politically beneficial. And I will say this. There is a world, what do you think of this theory, in which they're all completely found innocent, completely exonerated, and actually it stokes the kind of nationalist, the establishment is going after us, and it rallies some support.
I mean, that's going to be one of the narratives, whatever happens. The Scots Nats got there first with Trumpianism, frankly. And the 2014 referendum, while in many ways extremely impressive in terms of turnout and democratic engagement, was nasty. And you hear journalists talk about the way that they were treated during that period. And they say you're far worse than anything that happened over Brexit.
Mm. Yeah, it was all pretty nasty.
So I think it's really worth remembering that. That whatever happens, there will be people who believe this is all a conspiracy.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Hamza Yousaf having to answer questions on this puts him in a very politically difficult position.
Which he is not equipped to deal with, let's face it.
Yeah, I mean, he was also on the aforementioned Nora Kreinsberg show. He said, and this was before Sturgeon went for interview and was arrested. He said that she was in a good place and doing well during that interview. Might be true. But, and this is another interesting thing, brief to the Times, that they say allies of Sturgeon suggested that she would be almost relieved by her arrest because it ended speculation over whether police would bring her in for questioning under caution. So I get that.
Yes, it ends speculation by the answer being yes. Yes, they are going to do that.
Exactly. You kind of, it's sort of back to what we were saying about the by-elections. You kind of get the pain, the difficult bit done.
Oh, well, I've died now. I'm relieved. I was wondering if it was going to happen.
Oh, stop it. I can't take you anywhere, can I?
Well, it's just bizarre. I mean, there's spin and there's spin.
Yeah. Look, this is very, very messy. I think everyone involved will want it to conclude as quickly as possible. And I absolutely include the police in that because this is very difficult for them to navigate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm sure we'll be back on Friday. I'm sure it'll be another really, really quiet show.
Quiet week, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Maybe.
Can I just give a shout out very quickly? I don't normally do this because it's not that professional, but
nothing about this show is professional, please, Emma.
One of the reasons that I was unable to do it on Friday was that the Fabian Society, who I'm a part-time media consultant for, launched their brilliant new report on the future of social care, and I'm just so proud to have been a part of that work. It's so important. You know, a proper, really well thought through, really detailed roadmap to how we get to a national care service. I won't do this for every Fabian report because we do it every week, but I'm just, this one is a big one and I think it's a brilliant piece of work and I do urge listeners to have a look.
Yeah, and whether you view the world.
Oh, and also
from...
I was on another podcast.
We'll take a look.
We've launched a new podcast called Fabian Thinking, where I actually interview the researchers about their process as well as their outcomes, which is great fun.
Wow. So Emma's cheating on me. That's nice. but whether or not you see the world as the Fabians do, obviously we need to have serious, serious, serious discussions about social care. So that is a worthy contribution. We'll be back on Friday, assuming the apocalypse hasn't happened and we've had to jump back on the mics. Emma, quickly remind people where you can be found.
I have a newsletter at Substack called Hard Thinking on the Soft Left, and I'm on Twitter at @EmmaBurnell_.
To head over to theaddition.net to see everything from me, newsletter, blog, podcast, and the like, I'm at Charlotte A. Henry on Twitter and at Charlotte A. Henry or at Charlotte A. Henry on basically every social media platform you may or may not want to use. That was fun. We'll see you on Friday.